Good morning. Beautiful day. I really like children's stories. There's this thing that happens when you hear a story or watch a video. You relate to the main character, and it's as though it's you that's doing the things. It would have been pretty common for me as a youth, but I think I've heard others express it. You watch a movie where there's physical violence, and even though I wasn't a physically violent person, I was sort of in a scuffle as a child, but never really in a fight. I'd watch a movie about people who fight, and you walk out of the movie theater like ready to fight. Like looking for the bad guys, like you just, I don't know what that's called, but it's just what happens when you read a story. So I really like children's stories. I remember, like one of the first godly people I ever met, like really impressive godly people. This will sound so basic, probably to everyone listening here, but I remember the son had been unfaithful in something, and even what I'm saying that I never would have heard an adult talking about a child being unfaithful growing up. So here I was, a young man, watching a father deal with his son who had been unfaithful, and he's like, "Son, you've been unfaithful. Somehow like the father was saying, my heart isn't trusting in you because of what you're doing." And I saw the son like become downcast, and I was like, wow, like he was appealing to the son, the desire within the son for his father to trust in him. And he was saying like, don't you want that, son? Like, this is what's on the table here. Like I'm not trusting in you. And I could see in the son, like, ambition arising, like, I want to have my father's trust. I want my father to trust in me. I want to be found faithful in my father. And I had just never seen that. And it just blew me away. And I remember like taking a note, like, okay, that's something I want to employ when I'm raising up my children. I want to appeal to them these good things. And maybe that sounds basic to us, but I still remember the first time that I ever saw that. And so I really like children's stories. My children, I'm thankful they devour books. They really like books and children's stories, and sometimes they'll share them with me. And I really appreciate a well-written child story where the child where the child can relate to the character. Sometimes the character can make a bad choice, suffer the consequences, and then fix it. And I think a child reading that can learn a lesson from that, and then they never have to make that bad choice. They can sort of see through the. Sometimes a child can see their older sibling make a mistake, and then learn from that. And if we have, I think a good child story can do that. There's this thing that they say happens. When you imagine, well, let's say this. I heard about an experiment where they took three groups of children, and they had them all do some skill. They were trying to put a ball through a hoop, throw a basketball up into the hoop, and they figured out about how good that they were. And then they took one group and they had them practice for a week, and then they had another group, and they imagined practicing for a week. And then they had another group, and they didn't do anything. So the group that didn't do anything, the week after, when they tested them, they were just, their skill level was the same. The ones who practiced for a week were a little bit better. And the group that imagined practicing, who wants to guess? They were better than the children who did nothing. The scriptures say we're supposed to meditate on the ways of God. We're supposed to think about these things. When you do something over and over and over, it develops, it connects little things in your brains that make you, when you come to a situation, you always do that certain thing. You have a tendency to do it. These are called habits. Well, you can you can make those little connections in your brain just by thinking about things. So we should be thinking about good things all the time. We should be imagining ourselves being generous. We should be imagining ourselves being patient. I find myself, you know how when you try to memorize something, you say it in your head, and then there's a certain part that you don't get. There's a certain, you tell the person who's helping you, okay, and then what? And they tell you, and then you just like, you try to say it like 3 or 4 times, like da 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 da. Da-da-da-da-da. Like you're trying to make those little connections in your brain so that next time they'll already be connected there. And so I do the same thing. I find myself in a situation where I'm being tested, and I don't say something, and then I realize, oh, I'm so glad I held my tongue right there. And I do the same thing, like I'm trying to memorize something. Okay, when that happens, don't say anything. When that happens, don't say anything. Or vice versa. Okay, when this happens, I'm just going to do this. I try to. It's good to meditate on things. And anyway, that's what I like about good children's stories. I think it's good for children. They see something played out in a good way, and I think it makes little connections. Anyway, I like children's stories. I wish I could write children's stories. I've got some ideas in my head for some children's stories. One of them is called The Two Tests. That's a really good one that maybe I'll tell you about sometimes. But today I want to tell you about a story idea that I have. I'm sorry I don't have the story all written out for you, but it's about it's a story about a little girl named Faith. And maybe if any of you hearing the ideas that I have had any ideas, you could tell me about them and I could try to implement them in the story. So I don't have this all figured out yet, but Faith is a little girl. I don't know how little, but somehow she's little enough that she doesn't know where melons come from. She likes melons, but she doesn't know where they come from. And I couldn't quite figure that out because, I mean, all of my friends, even when children are really little, they know about farming and they know about gardening. So Faith is either adopted. She's maybe like a girl that comes from the city and she doesn't know about gardens and stuff. And maybe she's visiting some country folk, some country relatives for the summer, or else her just lifestyle changes. Maybe her parents move from the city to the country, or maybe she's adopted. But anyway, somehow her mama figures out that she doesn't know this, and she says, "I'm gonna teach you where melons come from." And she says, "I know where melons come from, the grocery store." She knows that, and so the next day, her mama's going to show her where melons come from, and they go to the store just like little Faith thought. But when they walk in the store, she thought they were going to turn right over here because that's where they sell the cucumbers and the tomatoes and the apples and the melons, but they turned this way. And she was confused because she knows the melons are over there, but they went to the section where the gardening stuff was. And there was this rack, and it had all these little paper packages with all these pictures of little plants on them, and somehow this little girl Faith has never seen this stuff before. And there's little chick, 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 you can shake the little packages, and they have pictures, and her mama tells her to pick out the kinds of melons, and she's like, there's no way there's melons inside those little packages. But so she long melons, round melons, yellow melons, orange melons, some's with seeds, some's without. She got the red ones with seeds because that's what she was used to. Okay, and that's another trick. So somehow she's eaten melons and seen seeds but doesn't quite make the connection. So that's another little part of the story. But so she picks the red melons and she takes them home. Mama opens the package and sure enough, there was no melons inside. There was these little things. Maybe that's the ticket. She had always gotten seedless. She had always gotten seedless melons, so she didn't even know that melons had seeds. So her mama takes her outside, and she's still real confused because she thought she was going to be learning about melons. But her mama, they take a patch and they work. They tear out the grass, they till up the soil, they pull all the weeds. I mean, it's just so much work. She's wondering what this has to do with melons. They dig little holes in the ground. They put the little seeds in the holes. They cover it up with mulch, all the things that go with gardening, and she's just confused. And Mama tries to explain to her, now these seeds are going to somehow grow into plants, and the plants and melons are going to come out of the plants. And she just thinks that's incredible. She hardly believes it. And so she says something cute like, so tomorrow we'll have melons? And Mama says, no, not tomorrow. So first the plant has to come, and that's how it goes. And so the next day she goes out and she looks. and it looks exactly the same as the day before, and she's confused. And her mama explains that it takes time, and so she waters them, and she goes out every day, and even though some days, even though she can see things are changing, nothing's really seems much different than the day before, even though things this week are maybe a little different than they were last week, and she has to water every day, and there'll be something in there about like maybe there's little weeds come up, and she pulls the weeds when they're little, but then maybe she lets them go for a little while, and then they get harder. That'll be a good little side thing, that it's easier to pull the weeds when they're little. And then another thing is that Sissy thought that was going to come. She waters every day. She pulls the weeds. Anyway, at some point in the story, she gets discouraged and she's impatient, and she says, and this is the key for me, for the whole story revolves around this right here. She says, why should I go pull the weeds? Why should I water? I've been doing this for weeks and there's no melons. This is pointless. This is fruitless. And her mama encourages her to continue, and she does continue. And then finally there's the flowers and the little melons, and then they get bigger, and then she gets to eat them. But the big point of the story is this, and this is the thing that I want to that I would want for children or anybody to get out of the story, and that I want to talk about just briefly this morning, and that is it's a two-sided, and the first side is that we can be working on something or praying for something and it seems like there's no fruit. Nothing seems to be happening. Things seem to be just like they were yesterday, maybe even last week. And it's just, I heard a saying recently that said the last thing to appear on a tree is the fruit. I mean, on a tree there's years of investment and labor before the fruit comes. And that's just an encouragement, like, that though there's no fruit today, and maybe not even next week, we continue to faithfully water. We continue to faithfully pull weeds. We don't give up. And then the other side of that is, I've heard people talk disparage about God, I guess mostly about God. I think it's what the scripture says. It says, why do the heathen rage? How is it that people who don't follow God, who don't walk in God's ways, I think I've seen this thing where somebody like curses God and then says, see, nothing happened to me. I just cursed God. If there was a God, surely he would have struck me down. Surely he would have squashed me or just made me die, right? But I just did this bad thing and nothing happened. And people can do bad things day after day and be like, nothing's happening. Everything seems to be going okay. But they're daily watering something that's going to grow into something really bad. I want to give a discouragement from doing something that we know is bad and thinking like, well, nothing's happening, something will happen. And I want to give an encouragement to doing good. Like, I keep doing good, I keep doing the thing that I'm supposed to be doing, I keep praying to God for this thing and nothing's happening, something will happen. It may not be the thing that we want, but something good will happen. When we invest good, when we water, when we're faithful, something good will happen. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And I think Proverbs 13, verse 8 says, the ransom of a man's life are his riches, but the poor heareth not rebuke. So this is the other side to what Jesus said. Jesus said, Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So where you're investing, what you're investing in, there will your heart be. And then this is the ransom. A ransom is a threat. A ransom is if the way ransom happens is somebody like will steal somebody's bicycle and then say, if you want your bicycle back, you need to give me some money. So if that person's treasure, if that person's bicycle is their treasure, then they're going to pay the price to get their bicycle back. It says, oh, did I read the second half? The ransom of a man's life are his riches. So if you want to threaten a man, you threaten to take away his riches. And then he's going to protect his investment. He's going to protect his riches. It says, but the poor heareth not rebuke. You can't threaten a poor man by taking away his riches, because he doesn't have any. You can't tell a poor man, if you better do what I say, or else I'm going to steal your bike. He can say, I don't have a bike. Or you can steal somebody's bike and say, you better pay me some money, or I'm not going to give you your bike back. And say, that bike was broken. Or I don't care about that bike. Or I'm not going to pay you a ransom for a bike I don't even care about. So if we're watering this plant, watering this thing that we're trying to bring forth fruit, and it's getting bigger and it's getting better, and we're almost, it's the melons are getting bigger, and then somebody threatens, I'm going to come tear up your watermelon patch. You're going to be like, no, please don't do that. I've invested so much in these melons. What do I do? Or if somebody says, hey, there's going to be a frost tonight or a hailstorm, you need to take some kind of precaution to take care of your melons. Maybe the rabbits are getting in. You better take care of those rabbits. If they're just little seedlings, or if you've neglected your melons and they're not going to bring forth fruit anyway, then who cares? But if you've invested in them and they're your treasure, then you're going to be trying to keep the rabbits out. You're going to be trying to protect them from the weather somehow, if you can. If somebody says, let's say we're praying for something to happen, we really care about something and we're praying, and temptation comes, and your heart says, if I sin against God, he's not going to hear my prayers. Well, if you're not praying anyway, like, what prayers? I'm not praying. I don't have any prayers. But if we're diligently praying for things and crying out to God for things and seeing our great need, when temptation comes, be like, well, if I give into this temptation, God's not going to hear my prayers. So I want, this is my treasure. My treasure is that God would hear my prayers. If we're investing in things and that's where our treasure is, then we're going to avoid those things that are going to threaten. So if our relationship with God is our treasure, and pleasing him on life and in our lives, and being found faithful in that day, having him say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. If that's your treasure, if that's what you want, then you'll be able to withstand when temptation comes. You'll say, no, that's gonna jeopardize my investment. That's gonna threaten my treasure. And then and then the other side of that, and this is my last point, is and this is the good side of that. When the enemy comes, Job's a good example of this very thing that I'm about to say. But the enemy will come and say, if you don't if you do this righteous thing, let's say if you dress modestly, that's an easy one. If you dress modestly, when you go out in public, people are going to look at you. And you're like, if your treasure is what people think about you, if you care about what people think about you, you're going to be like, oh no, I don't want people to think I dress funny. But if you're like, I don't care what people think about me, then the enemy is going to say, well, what does this person care about that I can threaten them with? Let's see. Oh, I know. If you do that thing God wants you to do, then you're not going to make very much money. And if you say, I don't care about money, he's like, and it goes on like that. If we don't care about the things of this world, then when the enemy comes to threaten to take them away, when we don't do what he wants or what everybody wants, it's not going to be any big thing. And if it gets all the way to like, if you're faithful to God in this area, you're going to die. Be like, well, that's okay, because that's not where my treasure is. Like, and this is one of the things when Jesus says we're moth and rust don't corrupt the heavenly treasure, and steal, and thieves can't break through and steal, and nobody can threaten you and to take away your patience. Nobody can threaten and take away your unselfishness. Like, those are safe and secure, and they won't pass away. If you're faithful to God and He's pleased with you, the enemy can't. There's nothing he can do. He can't take those things away. He can take away your what people think about you, what your health maybe, and all the way down to your life even. But if those things are not our treasure, he just walks around confounded. He has no leverage. He can't threaten us. He has nothing to hold for ransom. And that's all I wanted to share this morning. I'd be glad for any comments or ideas, to hear any comments or ideas that may have sparked. And at any time, if anybody has some little addition to add to my story, I'd be glad to for any help with that.
Thank you. That was very refreshing. I was just thinking how, to add to that just a little bit, how Jesus said we're supposed to be meek, we're supposed to be humble. These are the first things He taught us there in Sermon on the Mount, and so Satan can't get us, or people can't worry us, or being a man pleaser or a people pleaser is a pretty dangerous, very dangerous thing. Satan uses that to do this very thing of taking us to a place where God is not pleased with us anymore. Anyways, thank you. Amen.
Yeah, I had one quick comment. There was a lot there to think about that I appreciated, but mostly it just reminded me or refreshed my mind on what kind of power goes with having died. Having died, or dying daily, or having died to herself, and like when you said that thing, how the enemy would like threaten to the point of, okay, well, if you're gonna do this, you're gonna die, and it's like, that's okay, I'm not afraid to die. And that was one of the powers that the persecuted church through history has had, that not only like confounded the enemy, like one of the issues that the persecutors or the enemies had is just like, man, we just can't win these people. They're just not afraid to die. And then the other thing is how powerful of a witness it was to those who were like, what do these people have that is that makes them, you know, quite willing to die for. So I'm just glad to be reminded of that.
I was talking to a man last night that kind of reminded me of this. He said in the past he used to, I guess, focus on or make it aware to himself that he had good qualities or good traits, and that he needed to remember to focus on those things. And then he said when he started to take this, I guess it was considered like a legalized drug or something like that, that he noticed that it kind of always put him in this like good mood, euphoric, and didn't really struggle with life as much while he was on it, but then when he was off of it, he said he would like lose his grasp on how to handle situations, or would make him nervous or anxious or something like that. And he said over time he realized that the more he took that legalized drug, that it just kind of like defined how his behavior was, and he forgot all the good qualities that he thought he once had, and said, I was thinking about, I was trying to think about like whether or not I ever really considered whether I had good qualities or what to focus on. But I remember somebody saying, I don't know if it was last week, that whatever good quality or trait that God has instilled in you, that you ought to focus on those things, like increase them or enhance them or try to improve in those areas that are natural, and if there are areas that you're not so good in, to try to do better in those. Anyways, that's what it made me think.
Take it or we leave it for what it's worth. Those things that you were mentioning at the end, like the different ploys of the enemy, the things that he might do, how we might respond, man, that would be perfect. That would be idealistic. It'd be excellent if we could always respond that way. But he's a master at his trade, and I think he's successful at dangling things in front of men and getting them to doubt, to give up, to become frustrated, to forsake. I don't know how that plays in exactly with the promise in Romans that there is nothing that can separate us from God's love, but I know that we can make choice after choice after choice and ultimately wind up outside of that. But I guess, you know, maybe since he's so good at what he does, like I think that often, or it can be anyway, that people are brought to ruin by him or even pushed over the edge. And of course, we want to have the end thing and learned nothing out of it except just to be more miserable. But what if she tore a path for God and was stopped and somebody came alongside? And no, that's not what we've got to take heart. Take courage. We can't be discouraged by the fact that there's no fruit today and hope for fruit tomorrow. And I think you had something like that in there already anyway. But man, he's so good at what he does that he can bring men to ruin. And I don't know. I wish we could always respond in an ideal way, but it seems like we have to be careful, and sometimes it takes the coming alongside of somebody else to help us and to let us see a different way.